This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press, our good friend Joshua Clipperton. Joshua, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. How's it going?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Joshua?
Not bad. We're getting a blast of real winter here in Toronto today, so people are hunkered down, but we're surviving.
Do you want to trade? Because I bet you it's not as cold there as it is here.
Yeah, I know, you're probably right. But folks aren't quite as used to it. So,
yeah. Joshua, I just want to take a look around the NHL with you, and I think one of the most impressive stories that maybe now is getting really into the consciousness of NHL fans is what's happening on Long Island, split between, of course, Brooklyn and the Nassau County Coliseum. The New York Islanders are now first place in the Metropolitan Division. I think you could have won a lot of money if you had predicted that at this point in the season. I mean, the Islanders are, to my mind, the biggest surprise story in the NHL right now.
Yeah, I mean, you got a good argument there for sure. I mean, they've been, they're a team that, you know, a lot of people left for dead this summer, obviously, after, you know, John Tavares walked to the Maple Leafs. You know, they made some signings. Leo Komarov got a 4-year deal, which a lot of people, you know, raised eyebrows to, you know, getting Matt Martin back from the Leafs as well. But yeah, no, for sure. It's, you know, been very surprising how they've done it. I mean, another huge win last night. I'm sure, you know, they did a lot of that for their coach with Barry Trotz going back to Washington, obviously. But, yeah, I know it's, it just goes to show that the experts, very often don't have all the answers and they're proving a lot of people wrong right now.
Josh, you're in the center of the hockey universe right now, so we have to ask you about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Disappointing 3-1 loss to the Florida Panthers last night after that huge win in Tampa Bay over the Lightning, and it looked like the Leafs were turning things around after that really disappointing loss on Monday against the Colorado Avalanche. But considering that they've lost 3 of their last 4 games, is Kyle Dubas looking to make a trade here, or does he still want to see how he does in the next couple of games before the All-Star break?
Yeah, I don't think there's a ton of urgency yet. I mean, they've to get more deep into it, they've lost 6 of their last 9. So they've just not been the same team since Christmas. You know, there's William Nylander has, I think, has 1 goal in 19 games since the end of his contract impasse. Auston Matthews has 1 in his last 12. They need to get these guys going. It's a real conundrum for Babcock, I think, right now. I'm sure you guys obviously saw the struggles of the number 2 D pair with Zaitsev and mm-hmm. and Gardner obviously getting the boos here, which frankly aren't really warranted. He's had a rough stretch, but he's a 50-point defenseman, and they're really not going to get anybody better. So I'm not sure that anger is placed in the right direction right now. I don't think there's an urgency at the moment, but I do think that they're. We'll be looking. I mean, the blue line has been a hot topic here, you know, since training camp. And, you know, Nikita Zaitsev especially. I mean, Gardner's getting a lot of the heat, but Zaitsev is just, you know, he's putting his partner in a lot of bad positions. And you watch him, and it's just off the glass, off the boards, and dangerous pass to his center or his defense partner. So, if anything, he's the guy that's really struggled. And I do think that... while there's not a lot of panic yet, there'll probably be a few more calls made.
You know, Joshua, switching over to the West Coast, looking at the Vancouver Canucks, this was supposed to be part of the rebuilding season, yet there they are, second wild card spot, and calling up their prospect goaltender in Thatcher Demko. Are you a little surprised that he's getting the call to be the guy in, or at least the backup, sorry, in Vancouver?
No, not surprised. I think this is something that they've been sort of the path they've been on for a while. With him, I mean, I was out in Vancouver for 5 years, as you guys know, just came back east the last season, so I was covering the Canucks fairly closely, and, you know, Demko has been a topic for a long time out there. I mean, he was a 20-year-old kid, he was, you know, in Boston College, he was a early second-round pick, excuse me. So they've been patient with him. He spent 2.5 years in Utica in the AHL with them. So they've let him sort of develop. He's 23 now. Just real cool, calm kid. We talked to him in Toronto when the Canucks were here. He'd just gotten called up after the trade of Nielsen, you know, across the hallway to the Senators when the Canucks were in Ottawa. So I'm not surprised that he's up, and this is a really good stretch for them. They don't have a lot of back-to-backs. I think they play all home games in January, so there's no excuses. When he gets in there, the team will be rested. No, Markstrom's had a good run, but, I mean, look at his body of work. He's not been able to be consistent. Now, they owe him a lot this season for what he's done, but I would say that, you know, if they can get a 1-1-A kind of thing going with Demko, that'll be good news for Vancouver because, you know, Nielsen was really battling the puck towards the end in Vancouver. So seeing Demko up doesn't surprise me. And I think the spot for him to get some games, I mean, he played great last night, is perfect.
Joshua Clipperton is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joshua is the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press. Joshua, earlier this week, announced that there's not going to be a World Cup of Hockey in 2020. Why should fans not press the panic button in terms of how this relates to a lockout or a strike by the players or a lockout by the ownership?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think on the surface you could look at it as negative, but I think if you dig a little deeper, as people have sort of talked about the last few days since this news came out, I think it's a positive. The two sides are talking. There's no you know, animosity leaking out from the meetings they've had. They met in Vegas and they met in Toronto this week. The players just quite frankly weren't willing to let this World Cup be a bargaining chip the way that the NHL kind of lorded the 2018 Olympics over them in terms of a bargaining chip. So it's unfortunate. I don't know what hardcore fans of Team Europe and Team North America are going to do now that they don't have a team to cheer for. But I don't think it's as big a deal as maybe it seems on the surface. It's too bad. But I also think that, you know, the last tournament was iffy at best in terms of appeal. The players didn't seem fully interested in it. But it is too bad to, you know, it's best. It's great to see best on best, but. You know, I don't think that it's, you know, a death knell by any stretch. It seems like relatively positive talk coming out of both sides ahead of, you know, labor negotiations.
Josh, if there isn't going to be a World Cup in 2020, what does that mean for the Olympics in China in 2022? Do you think that means that there's a better chance of the NHL participating in the China Olympics, or do you think it's way too early to know right now?
Well, I mean, I think it's obvious. I think, you know, to put it bluntly, it's too early to know, but I know that China is such a different market than South Korea with hockey and with the way the NHL views it. They've done their exhibition games over there. They've you know, had you know, the Canucks are over there. I know the Flames are over there. The Bruins, you know, in the last few years. So that's obviously a market that they see as important to the development of the league. I think it really comes down to what the IIHF is willing to do in terms of what the NHL wants. I mean, the NHL would love the World Cup to take off. I don't think there's any doubt about it where they wouldn't need the Olympics anymore. Dog's barking here. Sorry about that. I think... sorry, lost my train of thought.
What kind of dog?
Exactly. I think that the NHL would love to have the World Cup, you know, be its tournament. I don't think that's going to happen for a while. So I would, again, this is going to come into the negotiations at the time. I think 2022, I don't think you could really read one way or the other with it right now. But I would be very, very surprised just because China is such an important market if they weren't there in 2022.
Josh, late Wednesday night, the Anaheim Ducks GM Bob Murray made three trades, and then the bigger one came the day before, Andrew Cogliano going to the Dallas Stars for Devon Shore. I mean, Anaheim obviously recently broke their losing streak. They beat the Minnesota Wild a couple of days ago, 3-0. They're going to look to continue that tonight in New Jersey. But what did you think of those moves, and do you still think that they have a shot of making the playoffs this year? Because I believe they're still only 1 point behind Vancouver for that last wild card spot.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, for a team to lose that many games in a row and still be in it, it just goes to show how much of a log jam there is at the bottom of the Western Conference standings and the Pacific Division in particular. The deal of the trades, I mean, they're sort of nibbling around the edges, if we're being honest, about what the moves were. There's nothing ground-shaking, but sometimes, you know, that gives the team the kick in the butt. I thought what was even more interesting was Bob Murray, who's not one to go out and you know, seek attention, releasing the statement after, I think it was, can't remember which game it was, but it was one of the more recent losses about Randy Carlyle's, you know, job security and having to come out and basically say, you know, we're not going to make a change. So, I mean, he's obviously, you know, put his eggs in that coach's basket, at least for this season. You know, the trades are, I mean, sometimes like little trades make big differences, you know, just to shake things up. Like you said, they're only 1 point out there. You know, Minnesota and Edmonton are between them right now, if I'm not mistaken. Dallas also has 50 points. So, I mean, we used to talk about 90, 95 points getting into the playoffs. And, you know, it's very possible we'll be on the low end this year in the West.
You know, Josh, we're talking about, you know, trades, that idea of trading. And, you know, with the Western teams, there's probably about five really good teams in the East. Obviously, you have the Tampa Bay Lightning, and then you have about five or six that are below the Lightning. Do you anticipate it being like an arms race this season? Do you think there's going to be more of a significant trade deadline as we approach? It's still 5 weeks away, but, you know, the way the NHL works.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think that the problem is like just who can fit what under the salary cap, right? And a lot of these teams, you look at Ottawa with Matt Duchene, you look at Philly with Wayne Simmonds, there's going to be intense contract negotiations with those guys before, and a lot of that will come down to whether or not they sign or not, of course, right? I mean, Duchene looks like one of the guys who would be the, you know, the hottest commodity should he choose not to sign with Ottawa. Simmonds, I know Chuck Fletcher said yesterday that they'll either sign him or trade him. So, I mean, it really comes down to that in terms of the big names being out there in terms of an arms race. You know, a lot of teams are loath to give away their picks and their young prospects just because of the salary cap these days, because you need to fill out your bottom, you know, six, your wingers with cheaper options, relatively speaking, when you're paying, you know, players like Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews is going to get a massive contract. So you can't be having wingers that are making $4 or $5 million. You need younger guys that can fill that void. So, and you know, a lot of teams are pressed up against the cap. I know that Toronto has cap space. Just as an example here, they could probably get a rental, but I mean, it depends on the cost because you need those players moving forward to fill those spots, especially, you know, when there's going to be a massive chunk, you know, towards your star players.
Last question for you, Joshua. In Calgary, they're atop the Western Conference with 67 points. Do you trust the goaltending tandem of David Rittich and Mike Smith come playoff time?
Well, I guess time will tell. I don't personally. I've been burned enough hockey pools by Mike Smith in my day to say that I'm not biggest supporter of that. But I mean, if that team gets a save here or there, you know, they're even better at this point. I mean, to think about some of the games they gave away early and where they still sit. It's tough to trade goalies during the season. It doesn't usually work. I mean, you saw with Ryan Miller a couple years ago in St. Louis. It's just difficult to make that move and bring a starting goalie, and it just doesn't happen very often. So those are the guys that they've decided to go with, and we'll just have to see. I mean, if I'm a Flames fan, that's what I look at as obviously our weak spot. I mean, I guess time will tell, but if there's one weakness, it's obviously between the pipes.
Joshua Clipperton is the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press.
Josh, go walk your dog.
Yeah.
We're already out there. I don't know what his problem is. He froze his paws earlier.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys. You too. Bye-bye.
Take care. When we come back, we shift our focus back to the Jets and the Stars. Update from morning skates, some roster moves, etc. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website, of course, is IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys, located at 982 Portage Avenue. At Keener Jerseys, making a better jersey is what they do. To have your jersey customized or to order new jerseys for your rec team, go to KeenerJerseys.com. Keener Jerseys, they are on your team.
Before we get into the Jets and Stars,
yes,
boys, we forgot to do this earlier in the show. Big happy birthday shout out to Joe Piscucci.
Happy birthday, Joe.
Former CKND Jets reporter, former Global News Sports director.
Yeah, good friend of this program.
Good friend of the show. So big happy birthday to Joe.
Someone we gave a shout out to last week.
It's true. We did. So 2 weeks in a row,
yeah,
for Joe.
Joe's,
so congratulations.
Joe's living it up in retirement.
He is. The Jets and the Dallas Stars tonight in Dallas, a game, of course, you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets are on the ice for their morning skate right now. No sign of Blake Wheeler and Josh Morrissey. reported to be just maintenance, but of course we'll get the latest on that. Wheeler missed the morning skate in Nashville as well, so you wonder if he's, you know, dealing with something maybe a little nicked up, and they're giving him a little extra rest as a result. In any event, no Ben Sherratt also on the ice, so you'd expect the Jets' blue line to be the same, and we'll find out more on Morrissey and Wheeler in the next little bit. In terms of the Dallas point of view, they're breaking up Ben and Sagan for tonight's game, which is obviously a little bit of an interesting move. Ben is going to play with Radek Faksa and Blake Como, and Sagan and Radulov are joined by Janmark on their top line. Things aren't going great for the Dallas Stars, another case of a little bit of dysfunction. Here's what Craig Button had to say about the Dallas Stars after Alex Radulov and Jim Montgomery got into it in their last game.
I think the takeaway is we're looking at a dysfunctional organization right now, and it's like a poorly made suit. It seems like it's falling apart at the seams. And let's not forget that Coach Jim Montgomery said recently that this is a team and an organization that has a culture of mediocrity. So, you know, Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin have been terrific players, and the interesting thing about it is that Jim Montgomery talked about process. Well, the process that they were employing prior to not scoring was the same one that they were employing when they did score. So I thought it was completely unnecessary for what Jim Lights did. You start to say there's a culture of mediocrity. Just this question. What are the leaders doing about it? And leadership starts at the top. And right now, watching the Dallas Stars, they're not a very good team. And when you want to publicly shame your players and you want to say that the culture that they have is mediocre, I don't think you can expect what I would call a real cohesive, and let's sit around the campfire and sing Kumbaya. And it's really disappointing because I think that they were feeling that there was different hopes for this team. But right now, I don't see a way out of this for the Dallas Stars, because I think the damage that they've created, starting with Jim Lights and now Jim Montgomery, irreparable.
Dallas Stars losers of four games in a row entering tonight's contest against the Jets. They're 3-5-1, of course, since Lights made his comments blasting both Sagan and Ben.
Yeah, but having said that, you know, Dallas is still in a wild card spot. It goes back to what we've been talking about now for a couple of weeks. The Western Conference in the middle is very mediocre. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's towards the bottom, it's really bad. I mean, L.A. obviously is at the very bottom, and Chicago's not having a good year either. But Dallas, first off, I agree with everything Craig Button said. But it's almost like he's talking about a team that's out of the playoffs right now, and they're not.
But they're first-round fodder, let's be honest.
Well, I mean, regardless, Drew, yeah. I mean, you go back year after year, and what do we say? I mean, the standings really don't matter. It's about what you do. And don't get me wrong.
I think the standings matter this year.
Well, they matter every year in the sense that you get better matchups. But just let me finish here, Drew. When you're talking about the Jets and the Stars, I'm taking the Jets all day long. I mean, I don't think the Stars are going to beat the Jets or the Predators if the Predators end up finishing first, wherever they finish. But the Stars have a good chance, guys, at finishing third in the Central. I mean, Colorado's not playing well either. Nope. So when you're talking about, you know, all of these problems and, you know, Jim Montgomery fighting with, you know, Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, and then now Alex Radulov is a point-per-game player right now. I mean, Radulov's having a good year, and you look at, you know, John Klimberg, since he came back from his injury, he's playing really well. Miro Heiskanen, Drew, how many times have I mentioned to you that I think Heiskanen should be a Calder Trophy candidate right now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you know, you've got 35 games left in the season, but you look at the Stars team, guys, and considering that the West is a mess right now, I mean, they can, at the very least, get into the playoffs and maybe even finish third. And if you finish third, depending on, you know, what type of goaltending you get, and Ben Bishop and Anton Khudobin are giving them excellent goaltending this year. So it's kind of funny to me that, you know, there's so much turmoil surrounding the Stars, and they have this great opportunity in front of them to actually get into the playoffs and see what happens. And I realize, you know, Drew, you're rolling your eyes here. I'm not saying they're a Stanley Cup contender. That's not what I'm saying here. All I'm saying is, you still have a shot at making the playoffs. And that was what the goal was at the beginning of the season. They didn't make the playoffs last year. So you don't go from missing the playoffs to winning the Stanley Cup. I mean, that's what they have to be focused on here. And I think there is a good chance that they make the playoffs. I mean, you look at Edmonton, Minnesota, Vancouver, Anaheim. I mean, all of these teams have problems right now.
Sure. I mean, the only reason that that we're talking about the Stars as potentially being a playoff team, or the Avalanche, or the Canucks, I mean, the Western Conference, aside from the top five teams, is absolute crap. I mean, so that's why they have an opportunity. But ultimately, I mean, what if they were to make the playoffs? I mean, realistically, if the playoffs
it's
were started
better than missing the playoffs.
Well, maybe for revenue.
For revenue, marginally. I mean, they're first-round fodder. They're out in five games.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think there's the reality is you're not turning this ship around. And I think Ezzie's right to a point. You're not turning this thing around in one season. You're not going to say, well, we missed the playoffs last year. It was just an anomaly. Now we're going to win the Stanley Cup tomorrow because they really didn't make all the moves that were necessary. They didn't have the pieces in place to be that Stanley Cup team. And it wasn't simply a function of, well, we just had a boatload of injuries and now we're back, we're healthy, and we're ready to challenge for the Stanley Cup this year. They're not that team.
No, and I agree with you, Drew. And we were in Dallas the second game of the season. We were there for, shout out to Hartsey for his bachelor party in Dallas. We were there. Dallas beat the Jets.
Yeah.
And sure, the Jets didn't play well, and that was at the beginning of the year. But as far as I'm concerned, this is the most underachieving team in the entire league.
Very well might be the case, but then how do you get it going? Is Jim Montgomery's comments, is Jim Light's comments going to do anything to really get them going? Clearly, Light's comments didn't work. Montgomery's comments on Radulov, I mean, we'll see, I guess, tonight if all of a sudden he, you know, a fire is lit under him for tonight's game. I don't know what benefit it ultimately serves in calling out your players in the media.
Oh, I agree.
I mean, I find it to be, you know, if you owned a restaurant and your chef wasn't performing at his highest you know capability, you don't go and tell all your diners that the chef is having a bad night.
Well, if you do that, nobody's going to come eat at your restaurant. So
nobody's going to come buy your tickets if you keep saying that the players that we're paying, you know, you're paying to watch aren't performing very well.
No, I agree. I just we talked about it when those comments came out. I just didn't understand the motivation. I mean, I understand. There was frustration, and I understand the fact that they probably had already tried to go through the media. But to my mind, when a team does that, you're just going to lose the trust, because the fact of the matter is, like, why would a player have any faith that the organization is going to have their back when they're that easily
being called out?
So to me, you know, I mean, it's ironic because from a media perspective, and we joked about it afterwards, if anybody, you know, if Kevin Cheveldayoff wants to call us, you know, and have a chit-chat, where we're all, our doors are, our phones are always available and our doors are always open. But the fact of the matter is that most teams don't operate in that manner. And I get that there's a frustration, but I just don't see how it was constructive for the organization. Again, if you're that upset about a player's impact or performance, then you have to do something. And maybe it means maybe making a trade. But the irony is that, in fact, from a leverage perspective, you actually weaken your position, because nobody is, first of all, everybody knows now that you have a damaged asset. Even if the player is still as fantastic as he was yesterday, the truth is that people now know that you have a gun to your head and you have to have a move, because
his value has soured in your mind.
Absolutely. And not only is his value soured, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, as the opposing GM, that if he stays on the other team, well, guess what? Then he's not doing you guys any favor, because you don't really want him there anyways. And we heard Sagan when he was on that podcast. We talked about it a couple weeks ago, about the idea that he's built a home in Dallas and he's tried to make Dallas his home, and he signed the long-term contract. But, you know, like, it's a function of will these guys see that at the end of those contracts, or will we have to see some sort of new management in place? You know, it's very interesting what they've done. But to be honest, you, in my mind, and again, like we've talked about, they're a marginal team at best. They may make the playoffs. They may not make the playoffs. I mean, I don't think they're doing any damage. And I think the fact is that this is already a lost season.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody thinks that Tyler Seguin or Jamie Benn or Alex Radulov, for that matter, is going to be traded before the trade deadline. After this season, who knows? But I think it really comes back to what Dave was talking about with the culture of the team. And that's what Craig Button was talking about. There's a problem with the culture in Dallas, in with the Dallas Stars organization. I mean, when you have the CEO or CFO, whatever Jim Light is, CEO,
yeah,
when you have a guy telling reporters, and we have Sean Shapiro coming up in a couple minutes here, but when you have the CEO of a team saying, come in here, I want to blast the players so you can write about it in The Athletic.
It's,
I mean, obviously Sean Shapiro loved it, and, you know, the editors at The Athletic loved it, but I don't think the players loved it.
And I don't think the fans like it. I just don't understand the benefit it's supposed to provide for your team, for your franchise. When we come back, Sean Shapiro of TheAthletic.com in Dallas. He covers the Stars. He joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number three underway for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by by Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com in Dallas, Texas, he covers the Dallas Stars. Sean Shapiro joins us on the program. Sean, good morning, and thanks for joining us. Nope. Sean?
Nope.
No,
I'm right here. I can hear you now.
Okay, perfect. Now. Good morning, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Very well, thank you. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Stars and the Jets ahead of tonight's contest in Dallas. You know, there was the controversy with Jim Leitz putting Sagan and Ben on blast, and a little more controversy when Alex Radulov gets benched by Jim Montgomery, and they have a, I don't think a war of words is necessarily the appropriate terminology, but what were your thoughts on the latest Dallas Stars star to maybe have a run-in with coaching and or management?
Yeah, it's been a wild 3 weeks. Yesterday was only the 3 week anniversary of Jim Leitz's comments, and things have just been it's been quite a combination of events. The Radulov benching is an interesting one because it's something that it's not like this team has the luxury to bench a player like that. The Stars struggle to score; they really don't have much offensive depth. So to willingly take him out of the game for 10 minutes in a scoreless game at the time. And it was still the first period, but to willingly take that player out of your arsenal for a little bit says a lot to how far that conversation must have gone. And Radulov's an interesting player to coach, and Jim Montgomery's talked about it, and he knows he is. A lot of times it's something where you just say that's Radulov being Radulov. He takes long shifts. He ends up taking some bad hooking penalties. He lives in his own world a little bit, but with his level of play, you live with that because of what he brings when he's playing really well. And it's easier to live with that when you're winning. It's easier to live with that when things are going well. And I think it was just kind of frustration bubbling over of, like, hey, if we're taking longer shifts right now and you're not producing and the whole team is struggling, it's harder to live with that as a coach. And that's kind of where that bubbled down from. Radulov and Montgomery, by all accounts, have buried that hatchet. So I think they're good. It's funny just with how everything kind of seems to line up with what's happened the last 3 weeks.
Sean, the Stars just got off the ice for game day skate ahead of tonight's game versus the Jets, and you reported that Jamie Benn is on the second line with Radek Faksa and Blake Komo. Obviously, we're used to seeing him on that top line with Tyler Seguin and Alex Radulov. Is Jim Montgomery just trying to get Benn going? Is he trying to get that second line going? And how long do you think he's going to keep Benn on that second line?
I think it's a combination of factors. I think the first one is you're trying to spread wealth a little bit, and you're trying to maybe get things going. Putting Jamie on that line gives him a bit of that responsibility to carry a line himself and gets him going. And maybe that gets a second line that's a bit more of a threat. And I also think it's a spot where he looks at, with Sagan and Radulov, they can carry a line, and whoever you put with them should be able to produce. The other thing, just to answer how long they'll stay together, I think you'll see Ben Sagan and Radulov back together by the end of the game. It's the type of thing where we'll give this a try, they'll run with this, but Tim Montgomery juggles lines. All coaches juggle lines, but he juggles lines even more than others, and so I think they'll be back together by the end of the game, unless things go really well in the first period for that Faksa-Ben Komo line.
You know, Sean, earlier in the week we saw the Stars make a trade with the Ducks, sending Devin Shore for Andrew Cogliano. One's a 24-year-old player, the other is 31. What do you think the thinking was behind the trade, and do you anticipate the Stars being an active one team in the next 5 weeks?
I think the thinking behind the Shore-Cogliano trade, and I actually agree with it, is I think it makes them, the justification is it makes the Stars a better team right now. And I do agree with that this trade makes them better for this season. While Cogliano was a bit older, Shore's a guy who, while versatile and played a bunch of roles, wasn't really taking. I think Devin Shore was kind of what he had reached the point of what he was going to be in his career. Cogliano brings some more speed. Montgomery wants to play with more speed, and he's a guy that, in addition to his what he brings on the ice, he also is an addition that I kind of think helps that locker room, and they've been looking for leadership, and they're looking for guys to step up. Now, Devin Shore was a great guy in the locker room, but Devin Shore was 24, and wasn't much of that leader. Cogliano is the type of guy I think can kind of help in that realm of, hey, we're looking for people to step up, we're looking for people to change things around here. Now, how long that trade ages will be interesting, just because Cogliano signed for 3 years. But as far as the immediacy, I think the Stars aren't done for sure. I think they're still looking for another forward. They're still looking at they're shopping around to see if they can find a guy to fit in that. Maybe even Burakovsky from Washington. They're taking a look at guys who, another forward who maybe it's a guy who needs a fresh start. Maybe it's a guy who scored in the past. Somebody who can maybe do something to help boost the offense a little bit. And I don't think they're done. I think we're going to see the Stars do something else. And it might even be something for, if it gets to the point where we get closer to the deadline and we see, hey, Steven Johns and Mark Messier aren't returning this year, it might even be something for a defenseman just to shore up that defense and give them another real top four defender.
Sean Shapiro is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Sean covers the Dallas Stars for TheAthletic.com. And Sean, you mentioned somebody who might be needing a change of scenery. Brett Ritchie is a guy whose name has been bandied about on the trade block. He's got a career-high 16 goals. That was 3 years ago. He certainly hasn't been able to replicate that season at all. Is he a player who maybe his time with the Dallas Stars and with the Stars organization has just sort of run its course and it's time for him to move on somewhere else?
Yeah, he is, and he's someone who the Stars have done their research. They put the feelers out on Ritchie. They've tried to see what the market is for him, and that's obviously at the moment the market hasn't reached what it is, because he'd be gone if that was the case. But he's a guy who I think his time in Dallas has kind of come to an end. He doesn't really fit with how Jim Montgomery wants to play. Jim Montgomery likes his physical style, but And he speaks nicely about him, but it's the type of thing where the coach speaks nicely about you, but you never play more than 8 minutes. It's two messages that don't really line up. And he's also a guy who just he's never really been able to take advantage of opportunities when he's gotten them here in Dallas, and I think he's someone who is going to end up somewhere else, whether it's likely before February 25th. If not, I don't see him back with this team next year.
You know, Sean, I know we've asked about him before with you, but can you help me understand why Valeri Nichushkin still doesn't have a goal? I mean, we're past the midway mark of the season. This is a former first-round pick. He was taken a few spots ahead of Josh Morrissey back in 2013. He had 14 goals in his rookie year, and I realize that he's not playing on the top two lines right now, but when is he going to score a goal?
I mean, I've reached the bafflement part, too, myself, as what's been happening with him not scoring a goal, because there are reasons that he's not a so-called goal scorer, because when he gets in tight, he doesn't finish around the net. He seems to lack the wherewithal to kind of lift the puck in those situations where it's just doing so with finish. But, I mean, those are reasons, but to have zero goals is just even more so baffling, because he does go to the net hard sometimes. He is in the right spots at the right times, but he's both a combination of, there's really no finishing ability when natural ability that comes to play, and he's also unlucky. He doesn't even get those dirty goals. It is baffling now, because you'd think even if he said, okay, well, he's not much of a goal scorer, he'd still have at least one or two that maybe kicked off his pants or something like that and went in. I don't understand.
Right, and we should mention that he's not playing tonight against the Jets.
Yeah, he's not. He's an injury scratch tonight, actually. He's missed the last two games with a upper body injury, and that's the other thing, too. He hasn't been really consistently healthy, and I'm not using that as an excuse for why he's not scoring. It's just been interesting, because he'll go through and he'll play five or six games, then miss a game or two. So it's been something that might have a bit of an impact, but that doesn't stop from, he's a big guy. He goes to the net. That doesn't explain why not once this season a puck has taken a weird deflection and gone in off his skate or his knee or something like that.
You know, Sean, I asked you in my first question about the Stars making any big trades or any trades now that they've made their first one a couple days ago. But what about from within? Would they be looking to Cedar Park and maybe the Texas Stars, a team that's kind of middle of the pack right now in the AHL? Is there anybody that they can look to in their AHL franchise as someone that can help this team now?
Yeah, they've been trying a couple things. They called up Denis Gurianov. He's back in the lineup tonight. And he's a guy who I think can have a bit of an impact. He brings a lot of speed. And he's a guy who I think probably would be on this team, probably should be on this team, but they really just need to maybe make that Brett Ritchie move to open up space to get him that full-time spot on the roster. he's a guy who is really taking steps down there in Cedar Park and can help this team. Another guy just I'm interested to see, I don't know how his game will translate to the NHL, because obviously we all know that just because you score goals in the AHL doesn't mean you're necessarily going to be a goal scorer in the NHL. It can be an indicator, but there are different factors at play. But they've got a undrafted college free agent named Joel Esperance down in Cedar Park who hasn't gotten a call-up yet, but he's got 22 goals this year. He's second in the AHL in goal score. He's a guy who, for a team that has been struggling to score goals up here, he's a guy who I think probably gets a shot soon just because, A, he's big, his size, he goes to the net, and he can be that guy. Maybe he can be a net present guy. That's a name I would kind of keep an eye on there.
Last question for you, Sean. Sean Shapiro joining us on the program. He covers the Dallas Stars for TheAthletic.com. Ben Bishop having a very nice year in net for the Dallas Stars. You know, how important has his sort of resurgence been to being a, I'm not going to say a, you know, an upper echelon NHL goaltender, but one of those really solid goaltenders that a team can rely on a night-in, night-out basis?
It's been important, and if you think about it, I mean, if not for Matt Dumba's injury, Ben Bishop's in the All-Star game. He should have been an All-Star this year, but because Dumba was injured, Minnesota needed a representative, so Dubnyk went. But Bishop's been huge for this team. He's been a real calming factor. He's been someone that's made things, really helped smooth things over for a group that has had a bit of chaos. And also, you have to give a lot of credit to Anton Khudobin, too, because Khudobin's been that guy who I think Bishop and Khudobin have been pushing each other. Khudobin's have had some great games. He had a 49 save shutout a couple weeks back. And I think him and Bishop and Khudobin have really pushed each other. And I think it's created that type of internal competition where they both know their role, but they're both going out there to kind of show that I need that extra start here and there and stuff like that. And I think that's created a really good atmosphere in the crease.
Sean Shapiro covers the Dallas Stars for TheAthletic.com. Sean, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Sean. When we come back, we look around the NHL, some news and notes, more news if we get any from the Jets morning skate. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Jerome Iginla, formerly of the Calgary Flames, certainly that team he's best known for, along with his tremendous contributions to Team Canada. He'll have his jersey retired on March 2nd by the Flames before they play the Minnesota Wild. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated, has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh frozen food delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com or check out the store in person. It's in the Cordon Village Mall, the corner of Cordon and Lanark. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Ezzy, this is now your opportunity to wax poetic about Jerome Iginla and his career.
Wow. I mean, how much time do we have?
As far as I'm concerned, about 11 minutes.
Yeah. And
preferably don't take up the whole time.
Yeah. And yeah, we have other things to talk about. But obviously, you know, Drew, Iggy has always been one of my favorite NHL players. And, you know, it's great news coming out of Calgary earlier this week that they're going to retire his number, 12, of course. And I mean, it's the worst kept secret. Everybody knew that it was only a matter of time, right? When you're talking about Iggy, you're talking about the most goals, the most assists, the most points by any member of the Calgary Flames, right? And the only thing that Iggy did not accomplish, guys, in his career is winning the Stanley Cup. And he was one player who I was really hoping would get that cup towards the end of his career, but obviously it didn't happen. But when you're talking about Memorial Cups, he's got those. When you're talking about Olympic golds, he's got those as well, and all the other accolades. One of the most consistent goal scorers, and a couple of years ago we went over how many times he scored 30 goals, and obviously he had 50 and 40 as well, but he's going to end up going down as one of the greatest goal scorers in history. Maybe not necessarily at the top with guys like Wayne Gretzky and Alex Ovechkin, but you know, he's certainly, in my opinion, a top 20 goal scorer of all time, and probably, you know, the highlights that stand out to me, 2002, you know, he was a key part of that Canadian Olympic team, and 2004. We all remember Calgary was one game away from winning the Stanley Cup. We all remember the Iggy and Vinny LeCavalier fight, right? And, you know, Mika Kiprasov was obviously really good at net for the Flames.
Wait, but didn't they win it on Martin Jelena's phantom goal?
Yes, yeah, they did. Never counted, unfortunately.
Yeah. We were there.
It's amazing almost that they did win the Stanley
Not
Cup.
Not only that, the craziest part about it is that Martin Jelena had the series clinching goal in every series of that playoffs. I mean, I don't know that that had ever been done.
Well, it's Paul Henderson-esque, given that he had the game-winning goal in every game, the last four games in 72.
Right, but I just don't know that in the Stanley Cup.
No, yeah.
I can't imagine. I mean, again, I don't know. I don't have that stat in front of me. Yeah. But I can't imagine there's a player who had the series clinching goal in every single playoff round.
No, certainly a deserved honor for Jerome Iginla to have his number up in the rafters in the Saddle Dome, the place he spent so much of his career.
So Iggy ends his career with 625 goals, the majority of those with the Flames, of course. 1,300 points exactly. Kind of nice that he went 625, 675 for 1,300. Lucky 13. So these are his goal totals or his accomplishments. He scored 30 goals, Drew, 12 times. 12 times. Mm-hmm. He scored 40 goals 4 times. He scored 50 goals twice, and obviously we talked about, you know, in the playoffs he was nearly a point a game. Well, maybe not nearly a point a game, but 68 points in 81 games. So Jerome Iginla, I think most hockey fans would agree he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. As far as I'm concerned, he should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And, you know, just off the ice, guys, one of the greatest guys.
Certainly. Anyways, congratulations to Jerome Iginla. Some acquisitions, some trades, one of them being more significant than the other ones. We dealt with a couple of them on Wednesday's show when they were breaking as we were on air.
Are we going to talk about my boy Joe Blandisi?
No, we're not. We're going to talk about Nino Niederreiter being acquired by the Carolina Hurricanes.
Nino.
And Victor Rask going from Carolina to Minnesota.
El Nino.
Okay.
Did you own that album, Def Squad El Nino?
I'm just going to ignore that, Dave.
Cooperation?
Are you talking? Like, who are you
talking to? Well, he is talking.
Yeah, who are you talking to?
Come on, Redman, Keith Murray, and Eric Sermon. Def Squad.
Dave, what are your thoughts on the Niederreiter for Rask trade? Two teams that are struggling, sort of spinning their wheels, decide to team up and make that trade. Carolina getting Niederreiter, Minnesota Wild getting Victor Rask. The Wild really responded by losing 3-0 to the Anaheim Ducks shortly after the trade was taking place.
I think the Carolina Hurricanes got the better player, but I mean, I don't know that that's saying a tremendous amount. I think from my perspective, you're just jettisoning two players who really aren't doing much for their respective teams, and you're hoping that a change in scenery will do something for them. I know that the Wild, I think Paul Fenton said something along the lines of, well, you're getting a center, and that's always center depth is always an important piece to have. You don't know if maybe he's setting that up because they're going to be jettisoning some players elsewhere in trade. So perhaps they're kind of trying to build up the stable for things that could come, because, of course, there's been rumors that some of the centers within Minnesota could be on the move, mm-hmm. and the teams are kicking tires at that. So it's a function of perhaps they're just trying to plan for the future. But, I mean, to me, it's really a fairly minor deal. I don't think it's really going to do much for either team's fortune, personally, in the season.
Yeah, and, you know, Dave, Nino Niederreiter is a better player. And, mm-hmm. you know, Victor Rask has been very inconsistent for the Carolina Hurricanes. And Niederreiter has been a regular 20-goal scorer for the Wild. And, you know, this year he's had long stretches where he hasn't produced. So, you know, for me, if you're asking what player is going to have a bigger impact, it's going to be Nino Niederreiter. At least he has the ability to have a big impact on the game. I mean, Niederreiter, to me, is a top-six forward on most teams in the NHL. Mm-hmm. He's a really talented player, and he's actually been a guy that I think has played really well against the Jets over the years. And we've seen Dave Niederreiter time after time here with the Jets and Wild playing 4 or 5 times a season. But, you know, the Carolina Hurricanes, I think, are in tough to make the playoffs. I realize they're still, you know, they're still in it right now, but I just don't see the Hurricanes being much of a threat in the Eastern Conference playoffs. And when you're talking about the Wild, I think many of the things that we said about the Dallas Stars can be said about the Minnesota Wild. I mean, do the Wild really have the depth to compete with the Jets or the Predators in the playoffs? I don't think they do. And sure, Devan Dubnyk is still an excellent goaltender, and, you know, Ryan Suter is an excellent defenseman, and, you know, you've got a lot of talent there, veteran talent like Koivu and Parise, and, you know, I really like a guy like Jordan Greenway, but, you know, Victor Rask is not going to make a huge difference there. And I agree with Dave. I think there's a good chance that, you know, Paul Fenton has another move coming here, because if you're Paul Fenton, you're either going to do two things. You're going to say, we're not making the playoffs this year, or you're going to say, we're going to make the playoffs, but we're going to be third or fourth in the Central, and right now we're just not good enough to beat the Jets or the Predators, so I have to go out and I have to make a move to make our team significantly better. So basically, you're either a buyer or a seller, and right now, I don't think he knows.
The Minnesota Wild save a little bit of cap money. Victor Rask is making $4 million for the next three seasons after this year. Nina Ryder making $5.25 million for the next three seasons after this year. So a little bit of cap savings. You know, Victor Rask is a guy who looked like he had an upward trajectory. And it was only a couple years ago, back in 15-16, he had almost 50 points. He was a young player entering his second full season in the NHL, 21 goals. Since then, that was his high watermark. The numbers have diminished.
He had one good year.
He had one good year. I mean, even the year after that, where he had 45 points, wasn't bad.
But he had 16 goals, 14 goals. I mean, the fact is this year he has one goal in 26 games.
One goal, five assists. So
I mean, the fact of the matter is that you're hoping, as I said, that you may have a change of scenery that will get... I mean, Niederreiter has 9 goals, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're hoping for a player that, you know, a change in scenery that maybe will get them going. But I mean, and we don't know. I mean, obviously there's always circumstances, especially with those Eastern teams that we don't watch as much. So perhaps there's something that was going on with Rask, and that's the reason that
Peter Ryder is a better player.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And when you talk about Rask, he was playing a top six role, and he was being given top power play time.
The opportunity
on terrible teams.
The opportunity was certainly there for him, and he has not taken advantage of that since signing that, you know, fairly significant, you know, contract. You know, you're right.
Niederreiter, that was a bad contract.
It was a bad contract. You're absolutely right. It's proven to be a bad contract. I mean, you don't necessarily love the Niederreiter contract either. But, you know, when he was a 60-point guy, you can live with that. But that was a couple years ago, and he hasn't been anywhere near that. And these are two guys who are struggling to find their way on their teams. And I think both, both Paul Fenton and Don Waddell hope that a change in scenery rejuvenates both these players. I like it more from the Carolina Hurricanes' perspective. Niederreiter immediately steps in there and becomes the highest-paid forward on the team. And you hope that maybe he can a new location gets him going again for the Carolina Hurricanes. We talked about this with Joshua Clipperton earlier on in the interview when we had him join us in about an hour or so ago. The NHL and NHLPA jointly say no to a World Cup of Hockey in 2020. Is this a sign of a reason to panic? Is this just both sides realizing there's no sense in rushing into anything for a World Cup of Hockey that is, you know, questionably successful?
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that, Drew. I just really hope there, for everyone's sake, that there isn't a labor stoppage coming up here in 2020 or 2021, because we went through that in 2012. We went through that in 2004, 2005 when we lost a whole season. I think it's just really unfortunate for players and fans, right? Because I've talked about this many times on the show. I want to see best on best. I want to see a World Cup of Hockey every 4 years. I don't want to see a World Cup of Hockey every 8 years. Like, if you're going to do a World Cup of Hockey, like the World Cup of Soccer or any best on best international tournament, do it every 4 years. Obviously, that's not going to happen here, and I really hope this means that there's a good chance that the NHL will participate in the 2022 Winter Olympics in China, because when was the last time we saw best on best international hockey? I would argue it was the 2014 Olympics.
Sure, that would have been the last time. Mm-hmm. I mean, the World Cup wasn't
5 years ago.
Yeah, World Cup wasn't best on best, and obviously the Olympics weren't. So, I mean,
how many people watch Team Canada beat Team Europe? I mean,
Not as many as the NHL and NHLPA would have
hoped. Did anybody
actually
care about that?
No, I don't think anybody cares about it. I think the fact of the matter is, I think from the NHL's perspective, I don't think that they want to rock the boat. I think that they know that they're in a precarious position from the perspective of popularity, and I think that they know that a work stoppage is just going to just kill them. And I understand that both sides have issues, but with a new team coming into the NHL,
it's just too much money
to be fooling around, and you don't really want folks in Seattle being like, well, what's going on here? Like, this is the league we're joining, a league that is having its third work stoppage in how many years? So from my perspective, I just see that there's just too much to be lost for these two teams. For these two, now that having said that, the NHL and NHLPA.
Famous last words.
Yeah, I was going to say they've shown that they have a propensity for defeating what should be fairly easy negotiations. So we'll see what happens. But I would suspect that they know that this time around, like as he says, and if it means that there's no World Cup, well, I'm not going to be crying about it because I didn't really watch the last one. So who cares? At least from my perspective. And if it ends up meaning that there's going to be the Olympics, it's even better because I'd rather watch teams playing for their country on that stage than to watch a World Cup of Hockey.
Maybe a legal curve will fly to China.
Maybe not.
I've been to China. Dave, so I could go back.
Yeah. Quick update from the Winnipeg Jets morning skate. No roster changes, no lineup changes for the Jets. Tonight, Nikku is going to play with Joe Morrow. Ben Chiarot, had this been maybe a more essential game, could have played tonight, but the Jets are going to err on the side of caution, and he's going to get the night off, and then, of course, the full break week to get healthy. When we come back, our monthly fantasy segment with Cam Robinson of Dauber Hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. We got a jam-packed day of coverage here on TSN Radio 1290. We have the Manitoba Moose Contest, at least a portion of the Moose Contest. They're in action this afternoon against the San Antonio Rampage, and then we'll get you set, of course.
Mason Appleton. Mini bobblehead day today?
Mason Appleton, mini, but he won't be in.
Yeah, that's like continuing the history. Nobody is almost, it's almost, you get a bobblehead, you're almost inevitably not in the game.
It's a reward for being promoted to the NHL. You get an AHL bobblehead?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. And of course, we'll have coverage, of course, of the Jets and the Stars beginning, I believe, at 3 o'clock with Rick Ralph and friends, as it were, leading into the game coverage
Husses
tonight.
Husses
and KC for the AFC.
Go Chiefs.
I don't know. Go ahead.
You're not a Patriots fan. You're a Vikings fan.
I always liked the Patriots as a kid because their quarterback's name was
right.
Drew. Drew Bledsoe was the quarterback, so I liked him because of Drew Mandel and anything else. I don't really care, to be perfectly honest.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Dauber Hockey, we're pleased to be joined by Cam Robinson for our monthly fantasy hockey segment. Cam, good morning. How are you?
Morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Yeah, doing well, thanks.
That's good. Glad to hear it, Cam.
Cam, you're not a Patriots fan, right?
I am not a Patriots fan, yes.
Okay, there you
go. On the record. Yeah.
Who is your team? Do
Patriots
you have a team?
Patriots fans are the worst.
I'm not a huge NFL guy. I do like the Hawks, though. They're the close team for me here, being on Vancouver Island.
Fair enough. We can buy that. We can buy that excuse for the proximity.
Yeah.
Cam, we obviously brought you on to talk to the fantasy side of things. William Nylander is in a slump that can probably be called an epic slump. One goal, two assists in his last 18 games. From a fantasy hockey perspective, he was probably a pretty sought after player when he eventually signed with the Maple Leafs. Are you still holding on to him?
So it's interesting. So like you said, 3 points in 19 games this year, one in his last 14. Obviously, he's fighting it. So he was reunited with Matthews a couple games ago in that big statement win over Tampa Bay, looking like maybe, that was going to be a position he could hold on to for a bit. That's where he's played the majority of his time the last couple of years, or last year anyways. But he's only seen about 35% of his 5-on-5 ice with Matthews and was demoted to the fourth line yesterday. So it's tough to know. He's stuck on that second power play unit. There are signs of life, though. So he leads the Leafs in Corsi 4 and expected goals 4 percentage. He's among the league leaders in shot attempts per 60 and scoring chances per 60. And meanwhile, he's shooting, just 3% after living around that 10% range for his first 2 years. So this guy's due for a bump. Obviously, we know that a run of points should come along. But it's a bit of that chicken or the egg dilemma, though. Does he need to produce before getting locked in top six time, or does he get top six time in order to produce? Babcock's been kind of putting the lines in a blender a lot lately, so he hasn't been happy with the results, the chemistry that's been going on. I trust skill, though, and Nylander's got a whole heck of a lot of it, so I'd bank on him, bouncing back and playing at a kind of a 50-plus point pace in the last 20, 25 games. I still have hope that that's a potential for him. I think he's a great buy-low opportunity, especially in keeper leagues, as owners really, if they're going for a playoff spot and maybe you're not in one, you can probably peel him off for future years. In a one-year league, you'd be taking your chances down the stretch. But I think he's got the skills to do it. It's just a matter of will he get the time and will he kind of get rolling.
Cam, we wanted to ask you about Daniel Sprong of the Anaheim Ducks. He was traded, obviously, from Pittsburgh to Anaheim. He had no goals in 16 games with Pittsburgh, but he's got 6 goals in 19 games with Anaheim. And the Ducks obviously recently snapped that losing streak. Is Sprong someone you would be starting in those deeper fantasy leagues?
It'd have to be a fairly deep league because, right now he's skating on that fourth line. He is getting the second power play opportunities. Anaheim, they're in flux. Like you said, they did finally break that winless streak that was haunting them. But they brought in a ton of fresh faces lately, so he's no longer that new guy on the block who gets to swing on all the fun lines. He's kind of been around for a little bit now that he's slipped down. And He's proven to be a high-rate scorer in junior and in the American League. He hasn't been able to show that in the NHL. He has flashed a bit of it more in Anaheim now, but he's a bit of a one-dimensional player. It's a nice dimension, but it hasn't really clicked at the level that it needs to in order for him to consistently put up points. So I'm not overly interested in him in a really deep league where, you know, you're looking for a guy that can go on a heater for a week that normally plays at a 25 or 30-point pace. And, yeah, you know, he's someone that could potentially move up that way.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about Jordan Kyrou. He split the season between St. Louis and San Antonio Rampage, a team we'll see here in Winnipeg this afternoon. But, of course, Kyrou is not on the team because he was recalled earlier this week. He has one goal, two assists in 14 games. Boy, based on his point-per-game production in the AHL, is he someone who you think could have a breakout season in the second half of the season?
Again, it's going to depend on the deployment, but, you know, like you said, he's been very good in the American League. So he's leading all under-21 skaters in points per game. He had been skating on the second line in St. Louis with Ryan O'Reilly and a red-hot David Perron. Unfortunately, Perron's out today, so the lines, they get jumbled, and Kyrou's hanging out next to Sammy Blais and Sundqvist, so not nearly as much fun. This is a player who has good but not great hands, but just incredible speed, and he uses that speed to create havoc and offensive chances for himself and for his teammates. Is a nice, strong release. I don't consider him a high-end offensive asset. I think he's one of these guys that's really good at everything, and he has that speed that's really going to generate things for him. So he lives on the second power play unit. That's probably going to be the case for the rest of the season. Keeper leagues, definitely very interested. One-year leagues, I think he has the potential, especially if he can hang out with Perron and Ryan O'Reilly on that second line, that he's a guy that could break out for sure.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Cam Robinson of Dauber Hockey, talking about the fantasy side of the game. Cam, I always like it when a team that can't score trades one of their highest goal scorers. That's the Anaheim Ducks. They did that with Pontus Aberg earlier this week, albeit he's had trouble getting into the Ducks lineup. He moves from Anaheim to Minnesota. Do you expect this trade to affect Pontus Aberg's fantasy value?
Well, judging by where they're looking at him to start here, I think so, for sure. So it's interesting. The Minnesota GM, Paul Fenton, he helped draft Aberg in the second round when he was the assistant GM in Nashville back in 2012, so he knows the player well. Aberg, he's a proven scorer in the American League. He scored 30 goals and over a point a game a couple of times. Right now he's skating on the third line next to Coyle and Zach Parise, which is a good spot. They kind of roll three scoring lines in mini. He's playing the point on the top power play unit, which is a really nice spot, obviously. Not a secure one, though. Matt Dumba's out until late March. But if Aberg produces it in that spot, I think it could be his in the short term anyways. Like you said, he was the second leading scorer with the Ducks with 11 goals despite being a healthy scratch a bunch. Saw a lot of time next to Getzlaff. The injuries in Anaheim helped that, but it seems that teams aren't afraid to play him up the lineup with high-end players. So I think he's one of these guys that can play at or slightly above a point per game, or a half point per game pace, I beg your pardon, through the rest of the way, and especially if he's playing on that top power play unit.
Cam, we were talking about the New York Islanders earlier, and it seems like nobody's talking about the fact that they're now first in the Metropolitan Division, and Robin Leonard didn't start last night. It was Thomas Greiss, but you know, he's got 14 wins on the season, .928 save percentage, 2.11 goals against average. I know you know all the numbers, but as far as fantasy netminders, where does he rank, and do you think he's getting enough credit for what he's doing this year?
Yeah, he's probably not, but he might be one of the best stories of the year. He might be one of the best fantasy draft picks of the year. So, you know, there's plenty to like for the 27-year-old. He's clean and sober, and he's playing like he's got something to prove. So, like you said, he's got that .928 save percentage in all situations. He leads the league in 5-on-5 save percentage. Barry Trotz, you know, we can thank him a lot for that because the New York Islanders defense is playing a big role. They're only allowing about 27 shots against per night. Thomas Greiss is playing well, too, though. So Leonard doesn't get that heavy workload that some of the big names do, which decreases his value a titch. But on a per-game basis, when he's in the lineup, he's playing like a top-five netminder in fantasy right now. And this is a guy that was on waiver wires, you know, as recently as maybe 5-6 weeks ago. So if you pulled him off the wire for free or you drafted him late and you held on to him, he's been a terrific pickup and someone who's going to be very valuable down the stretch.
Okay, I'm sticking with the Islanders. Defenseman Nick Leddy has 8 points in his last 10 games. He plays on the team's first power play unit. His one goal, 17 assists in his 46 games this season. Should Leddy be starting in deeper leagues, especially ones that require a certain number of defensemen to be started?
Yeah, for sure. It's really hard to get defensemen that can produce, you know, at a 40 or 45 point pace. And so Leddy had a really quiet start to the year, but he's picking it up, like you said, 8 points in the last 10 games. A bit of a forgotten man on that Isles top power play unit, and a unit that's been really strong for over a month now. They've been a top 10 unit in the league. And this is a guy who's clicking way below his average shooting percentage. He's converting on, you know, 1.7, 1.8% right now. And he's available. He's available in 70% of Yahoo leagues, 70% of ESPN leagues. Hell, I just picked him up a couple days ago in my league as a depth guy. Someone that you can plug in if you have an injury to one of your star D-men. That it's difficult to get D that are playing on a top power play unit for free, and he's one of them, and he's out there in a lot of leagues.
Speaking of defensemen who are playing well, Eric Gustafson of the Chicago Blackhawks is playing well. We're joined by Cam Robinson of Dauber Hockey to talk fantasy hockey on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gustafson, 21 points in his last 22 games. He's got 30 points on the year in 46 games. What do you expect from Gustafson for the last 36 games of the season?
Well, he definitely won't keep up the point-a-game pace that he's been clicking at for the last 2 months. I think it's probably unlikely that he even keeps up the 60-point pace overall that he's put on the season. But, you know, can he play at a 50-point pace while racking up a ton of assists as Patty Kane goes off on a career year? I think that's very possible. Even as Chicago kind of settles in at the bottom of the league, he's worth a roster spot on your team. He's seen 3.5 minutes of power play time per game on that top unit. He did get stapled to the bench against the Devils a couple games ago, but he came back and he looked strong again in the next game. His shooting percentage is way out of whack. He doesn't shoot the puck much, and he's clicking at 15%. So he's due for a reduction, like we were saying. He's not going to play at the point-of-game pace he's been at or the 60-point pace, probably. But, you know, he doesn't have the name value, and Chicago's not a very good team. If you're looking for a guy that's been playing very, very well and you want to load up for your playoff run, I think Gustafson's a great target.
Cam, we used to talk about this guy all the time, but it seems like we never talk about him. And, you know, we were messaging each other back and forth, and you mentioned that you wanted to talk about him. And that's, of course, Evander Kane. He's got 15 points in his last 10 games, including 8 points in his last 5 games. If you've got Kane in your hockey pool, are you expecting those good times to continue here?
Well, I think you know, maybe not at the rate he's doing it right now, but he's playing very well. And I think the key to this is that Thomas Hertl is playing the best hockey of his career too, and they're kind of locked together on what you can, you know, I guess their third line, but maybe their second line, arguably. So after a terrible November and a so-so December, you know, Kane has really, really woken up. So he's got 18 points in his last 14 games. He's averaging 3.5 shots per game over that span. Virtually all his production too over that run has been at 5-on-5, which is a nice sign for continued offense too. He's seeing under 2 minutes on the second power play unit. But he has a lot of talent to work with on that second unit. So Joe Thornton, Timo Meier, and oftentimes Carlson and Burns are staying up with both units. So that's pretty much a top power play unit, just not getting the first minute and a half each penalty. So he's a streaky scorer in the past, but with the way Hurdle's been playing, he's been producing the highest rate of assists in his career. And so at some point here, Kane's going to go on a heater with his goal scoring too. So that's only going to help matters out. So I think he's a good bet down the stretch here to play, you know, at or near a point per game, which is going to be big.
Cam, Flyers winger James Van Riemsdyk is playing on the top power play unit. He has 7 points in his last 4 games, 11 goals, 21 points in 31 games this season. Even though Philadelphia isn't going to be a playoff team this year, is JVR a player who you'd expect big fantasy production out of down the stretch?
You know, he's someone who's proven to be a 55-point player anyways with 60 kind of plus point upside. So, you know, playing with Giroux on that top line, playing on the top power play unit, he's looked good. And Claude Giroux's been kind of the only bright spot on that team this season. Maybe you could look at Carter Hart, too, now as a later story. But, I think that it's difficult to roster these players that are playing on kind of bottom feeders right now, but I think JVR, it took him a little bit to get rolling after that injury early on this season, but he's looking really strong right now, and he's got a lot of proof. You know, he signed for big money in Philadelphia, and they're not doing well, and kind of the axe is going to fall on some heads, and I think he's looking to be a player that's, you know, out of that shadow and looking as a positive light too next to Giroux. So I think he's going to be a good bet down the stretch.
Cam Robinson covers NHL, and he covers the world of fantasy hockey for Dauber Hockey. Cam, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot for having me on, guys.
Take care, Cam. We'll do it again soon. Up next, we put a bow on the trip to Winnipeg of the McLean family of Atlanta, Georgia. They've been here all week to watch some Jets and Moose hockey. We'll talk to them next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Final segment Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, two shows with Michelle Shaughnessy. She's been absolutely ripping it up all week. Two shows, 7:15, 10 p.m. Get your tickets at RumorsComedyClub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
If you read the article on IllegalCurve.com or you caught Dennis Bayak talking about them on Tuesday's broadcast between the Jets and the Golden Knights, you know that the McLean family of Atlanta, Georgia has been visiting Winnipeg for much of the last week. They're now back in Atlanta after having been to Nashville on Thursday to watch the Jets defeat the Predators, and we're pleased to be joined by Scott McLean, William, and Simon to talk about their trip here to Winnipeg. Gentlemen, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Morning.
Nice to have all three of you on the line at the same time. So you guys were Atlanta Thrashers fans from back in the day, and you decided to make the journey up to Winnipeg. I guess the first question I have to be, why did you make that journey in the middle of January?
Well, the short of it is, it's a college graduation present for Simon and William. William's just finishing his graduate degree, and Simon just finished his undergraduate. So I've been planning it for a couple of years. And they just finished in the fall, and I wanted to experience the full sense of Winnipeg. So being in the winter, I think, also gave us that.
Well, you certainly did well watching the Jets and the Moose. Both teams went undefeated while you were here during your time catching those games. I guess, you know, why did you stick with being a Jets fan after the team left Atlanta? We know that a lot of Thrashers fans became Predators fans. So what made you stick with the Jets now that were previously the Thrashers?
You know, the Thrashers were really our first love, and we were more attached to a lot of the players and the team. And then as we started following them with the Jets, we really just fell in love with the organization and the culture and the fan base, and just really became a new home for us.
So this is for Scott, William, or Simon. Since you guys came to Winnipeg, and Dave Minuk tweeted this out, the Jets went 4-0, and then the Moose went 2-0-1. So my question is, did you guys consider going to Dallas for tonight's game?
No, I thought about it for about 5 seconds, but we had to get back to our life here, and the budget didn't quite fit either. But we were looking for possible tickets and reservations, but nobody came through.
Guys, you know, obviously you had like you said, you wanted to have that full experience, and you now have gone back to Atlanta, and obviously it hasn't been a lot of time, but just reflecting back on the last week, what has it been like? How can you sum up the last week for you guys?
It's been amazing. It was one of the best vacations ever. I don't know if many people say that about Winnipeg in January, but the hockey was amazing, the people were amazing, and we got to have a bunch of once-in-a-lifetime experiences that I don't know if the trip had shaken out any better.
You know, guys, would Winnipeg Jets fans here in Winnipeg and, you know, across North America be surprised at how many Jets fans there are in Atlanta?
No, I don't think so. I think it's there aren't a lot of us. There are some, and I've met a lot of them on Twitter, but I think a lot of people have moved on, regretfully. I wish it was different.
Sorry, go ahead.
But like Simon said, our experience with the people there are just... William, I think, said this a few days ago, that the kindness and warmth and acceptance of Canadians is probably underrated. And we just experienced that fully.
Scott McLean, William McLean, Simon McLean, guys, we're so thankful that you enjoyed your time up here in Winnipeg and that you can, I guess, preach the gospel of January winter in Winnipeg to all your friends down south. And we hope your fandom continues. And thanks so much for joining us this morning. Thanks so much for letting us tell your story on IllegalCurve.com. And all the best going forward, guys.
Thanks a lot. And we're really looking forward to being back up sooner than later.
Absolutely. Hope to see you up here again real soon.
Right on, boys.
Scott McLean, William McLean, Simon McLean, all from Atlanta, Georgia, joining us to wrap their trip to Winnipeg. They did pretty good. What is it? 6-0-0-1?
Undefeated.
Or I guess 7-0-0-1 if you include the game in Nashville on Thursday night as well.
Yeah, a really nice experience. It was really nice getting a chance to meet them and just seeing, you know, how accepting people are. I mean, the fact is that people... And they said it to me when we talked to them at practice and just the idea that Winnipeggers understand what folks in Atlanta went through. So, you know, while you're always going to get some people who want to deny the Atlanta heritage of this Winnipeg Jets team, the fact of the matter is that nobody can understand the pain of people in Atlanta better than folks in Winnipeg having experienced it. Well, I should say folks who are old enough to remember experiencing it themselves.
Well, and they had season tickets, right, the last 4 years.
That's right.
And, you know, so... Even though the Thrashers have been gone now for 8 years, I mean, there were a lot of Thrashers fans. Was it, you know, the most well-supported NHL team? No, of course not, and that's one of the reasons why they left. But to your point, I think they know what it's like to lose an NHL team, and I think they were treated really well. And, you know, got to give a big shout-out to Dave M. for that article that he wrote.
Much as this might chagrin us to give Dave some kudos.
And it's getting a great reaction, right? Because, you know, it is a really great story that they came here in early January and then... You know, not only did they see a Jets game, they saw multiple Jets games, multiple Moose games, and, you know, they won all of them.
And, you know, the truth is, so just quickly, in case people haven't had a chance to read it, and we'll tweet out the link, but it's interesting. Scott was wearing the Brian Little jersey from the Jerseys Off Our Back, the last one that the Thrashers ever wore. And he was, for just to show you how big a hockey fan his wife is, he was married in that jersey a few years later, and he wore it to the games, and he had a chance to meet Brian Little on the game day skate on Tuesday. So kind of came full circle for the three of them, and they had a really nice experience, really nice family. So I was glad to play a small part, but it was a really nice experience for them.
Terrific. That's a great story, of course, with the McLean family. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to all of our guests. Jets broadcaster Paul Edmonds joined us in the first hour. Dan Carcillo joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, we've tweeted it out. It'll be on our website. It's on tsn1290.ca. Better hear that interview. The passion is one of the best interviews we've conducted in almost 10 years. Joshua Clipperton of the Canadian Press, Sean Shapiro of The Athletic, and of course Cam Robinson of Dauber Hockey. In case you missed any of the show, it's available on IllegalCurve.com, on TSN1290.ca, and wherever you may get your podcast. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Big props to producer Sean Asor, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.